I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode is brought to you by Talk, the only unified platform for reservations, takeout, and event management. Switch to Talk today to increase your revenue and reach 19 million loyal and engaged guests around the country. Well, hello, welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We are coming to you from the backyard of beloved Bucali in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, August 11th, 2021. This is our 298th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talent in the hospitality industry. Today, my guests are two legendary restaurateurs, one known for his pizza and the other for barbecue and tavern fare, and I'll introduce them fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round games, industry news, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to find your people. Yes, seek to surround yourself with those who get you, and you them. Our family can go beyond our blood relatives. They can be anyone who we love and trust and believes in us. Those who will be by our side for the good times and hard ones too. So let's embrace those relationships that make us feel good and lift us up. That's my tip today. Okay, I'm super excited to have my guest joining me. The first one is Mark Iacono. He is a well-revered pizzaiola and owner of Lucali in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn, which he founded in 2006 and has since received national recognition. Much national recognition, I should add. Mark recently opened a new slice shop down the block from Lucali called Baby Luke's. Plus, he's expanded Lucali to Miami. Prior to finding Lucali, Mark worked in construction and focused on granite and marble fabrication. He has starred in multiple shows, including Netflix Ugly Delicious, The Pizza Show, and Munchies. My second guest is Billy Durney. He is the owner of Hometown Barbecue in Red Hook, Industry City and Miami, and Red Hook Tavern in Red Hook, Brooklyn. After almost 20 years in the security and private protection field, Billy fulfilled a longtime dream of becoming head pit master, opening Hometown in 2013 to great success, going on to further expansion. In 2019, he launched the popular Red Hook Tavern, and he has been featured in national media, including Good Morning America, The New York Times, The New Yorker, Food Network, and more. Without further ado, hi guys, welcome to the show.
Hello, dear. How are you?
Happy I'm to good. Be here.
That was some intro.
We're undeserving of that intro. As soon as
she said legendary, I was like, oh boy.
Yeah. I feel like you have to be at least 85 to be considered a legend in everything you do.
Iconic.
But I did like the point you opened up with as far as family doesn't have to be blood necessarily. I think that actually speaks a lot to Mark and I's friendship and how it's grown so quickly. I'm not speaking for Mark, but obviously I consider him family and a brother, and I love him like my own brother, and you know, so it doesn't always have to be blood. So I thought that was a very interesting way to open the show, because that's pretty much exactly how I feel about Mark.
Billy took the words right out of my mouth. I really was going to touch on that, but well, he did it first.
Go ahead.
He's much more,
Well, when I came up with my tip, I was inspired by you too, and what I thought from somebody observing your relationship, that's who the tip came from. So
that definitely hit home for me.
I'm glad. I'm glad, because I do love seeing your brotherly love that you share for each other, and it's really nice. I think it's special.
It is
something I think that is super important, especially in this industry.
Yeah.
I'm learning more and more about it, and it's, you know, it does, kind of have a little bit of an ugly side to it. And to have someone like Billy in your corner makes me feel good.
Yeah. So how did you two meet?
Billy was a stalker.
That is 100% true. I was a stalker.
But no, I'm only kidding.
But he might not be the only one.
No, Mark has many stalkers. I was the original OG stalker.
You were not a no. I think we bumped into each other at the Franks, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I think that is the first time obviously I knew of Mark. I was one of the first customers waiting outside on those lines, or trying to get in the restaurant before I was ever in the restaurant industry when I was in my other business. And I've told Mark the story. I remember it vividly too. One of my best friends, Danny Quigley, and I grabbed a six pack of beer at the corner store. And Mark's looking at me like, you don't remember the story, but I feel like I told it to him about 12 times.
Well, I haven't heard it.
And we sat at the table that's right next to where the bathroom entrance is, and I made sure that it was like one of the first times in my old industry, we never sit with our backs to the door, but I sat with my back to the door just so I can watch Mark make the pizzas that night. He was here and he was making the pizzas, and I saw him rolling out pizzas with that wine bottle, and I had the fishing hook in my jaw from then, and I was all in, and I couldn't believe it was one of like the most like revolutionary nights of dining ever, and I was like, holy crap, where did this guy come from? How did this all happen? And that was it. I became a fan from then, and we didn't know each other then, but I was definitely in the stalker category.
Around when was this? Was this before you opened Hometown?
This is probably 2007 or 2000. Like you opened in 2006.
Six.
So it was in 2000. When? What month? Do you remember the month?
October. 2006.
Yeah. So it was right after that. It had to be right after that. I don't remember if it was very. I was definitely early on within the first
almost 15 years ago.
Within the first few months. Yeah. I was here.
So
I yelled at my hostess that night.
When did your brother open in?
Because she put such a, this big guy at the smallest table in the restaurant.
I don't know about that. Yeah, I was a much bigger version of myself then. Actually, I wasn't yet.
No?
No. I got big after opening Hometown.
I'll never forget my oldest brother when Billy had opened up down there. Came here and was like, yo, I just went to this amazing barbecue place. You gotta go. And I finally went. And I'm not sure if I knew you then.
No, you didn't. But we were out of everything, right? Except like one thing.
Yeah, I didn't know that, he sells out every night. And I got there and I heard about the lines. And I said, I'm just gonna go late at night, try to avoid the line, Sometimes I would jump out from behind a table like around 9:30, and just want to get something to eat. And then, I said, I'm going to check out this Hometown barbecue. And I get there and I was like, fuck. I was like, the only thing left that they had was a turkey sandwich. And I was like, all right, give me the turkey sandwich. And I remember biting into this thing. I was like, this is like one of the best things I've ever eaten. I have that mm-hmm. list, and this sandwich is now on it. And I was like, God, if the only thing left on the menu is this good, God only knows what everything else is like.
Yeah.
And I became hooked.
Yeah. Well, my experience, the same with both your restaurants. I mean, definitely I've become hooked and been to both several times. And there's something, you're both legendary in what your craft, I would say. But let's take us back a little bit to how you guys got started making pizza, doing barbecue, because I mean, just from the little I know, it looks you both grew up in Brooklyn and you both were in other careers and career changers. And like, how did you learn to make pizza? How did you learn to smoke meats and decide to open your own restaurants?
Yeah. So for me, it was traveling. I in my previous career, I got to travel around the world and, domestically often. And, it was a trip to South America watching these gauchos cook an animal over live fire, hand cranking the animal provide fire that just kind of rocked my boat. A year or two later, I was doing some work in and around Austin, and I had heard about this restaurant called Louis Miller Barbecue, and it's a tiny little kind of one light town called Taylor, Texas. And I said, oh, I have to go check this place out. I really didn't eat a ton of barbecue. I mean, where Mark and I grew up, barbecue is an event you go to, not a cuisine style. So barbecue is a little foreign for me, as far as, you know, I didn't realize that they smoke these meats for 14, 16 hours a day. And so I went to this place and I literally took one step in and I was so overwhelmed by it. And I don't know what came over me, but I just said, that day, that's what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And I remember eating the barbecue and being just, I mean, the hairs were standing on my up, and I knew that this was like a calling. And I came home, and, you know, several weeks later, I talked to my girlfriend, who is now my wife for almost 10 years at the time, and I said, listen, I'm literally considering stopping this really successful career I have and open up a barbecue restaurant. And instead of her saying, like, you're absolutely out of your mind, she was like, all right, well, let's give it a shot. And that was it. I spent the next 2 years basically researching, traveling around the world, eating wood-fired food from all different regions and countries. And I came back home, and it was the most sad I had ever been, actually, because I said, you know, yeah, barbecue in North Carolina is great, barbecue in Texas is great, barbecue in Kansas is great, all these places are great, but at the end of the day, that's not who I am. I'm a street kid from Brooklyn. What do I know about what those people in the South are doing? I don't know anything. So, you know, I took a lot of soul searching, and I said, you know, I'm gonna learn the craft. I'm gonna do, you know, stick to trying to make the best barbecue I can, but I'm gonna, but I grew up in the most multi-ethnic, beautiful, culturally diverse city in the world, so with the most culturally diverse people, so I wanted that represented on the menu. So I said, I'll use these old archaic ways of cooking meat on live fire, and I'll spend the time honing that craft, but at the end of the day, I just want to represent Brooklyn and represent the people I grew up around. So you'll find everything from Korean sticky ribs to Vietnamese wings and Jamaican jerk baby back ribs and so on and so forth. And obviously I give homage to Texas with the beef rib and brisket, and but at the end of the day, I want, you know, pastrami bacon and those things to really sing, because those are the things that are represented most from my soul, because I grew up a street kid here in Brooklyn.
Yeah, amazing. And what about you, Mark?
Me, I think it's the total opposite of Billy. I was kind of like in a bubble. What was the question?
You switched careers.
Yes.
And what inspired you to open Lucali? And how did you learn to make pizza?
Well, switching careers, you know, I was... It all started with, like, you know, there's a lot more to the story that I tell, usually. You know, the transforming of my two careers, I don't really know how to explain this. Like, it started with me opening up a pizzeria, and I was going to open up a pizzeria, and I was going to keep my regular 9-to-5 and have guys working for me. The build out was a passion project. It took me 2.5 years to do. It was more about that than the pizza first. Building,
yeah.
I my whole life I spent building for other people and their designs and everything. And now it was something that I wanted to do. It was more of an architectural thing, believe it or not.
Yeah.
In the very beginning. And then it transformed into me starting to becoming passionate about pizza. And, you know, it was, you know, I really want the people to come and say, hey, look at this beautiful place I built.
Look at this
amazing pizza I make, you know?
And the lighting.
And yes. And then it just totally, totally morphed into what it is. It wasn't a plan. Like I said, and here you had Billy traveling the world. Someone once mentioned to me, you know, a lot of my success has to do with like that whole ignorance is bliss. You know, I was totally ignorant to the restaurant industry and the food world. Like I said, I was in my bubble. I never really traveled. The food culture, the pizza culture, I just, you know, Billy had mentioned how there are all these different nuances and diversity in food, especially in New York. Pizza, there really wasn't that much diversity. And so I guess my vision of pizza wasn't tainted, you know. And me growing up in all these pizzerias, you know, and you know, all over Brooklyn, you know, I would just grab little nuances of different types of pizzas from different pizzerias. And then one day a friend just brings to my attention this guy, Dominic DeFara.
Yeah.
He's like, you gotta go. And I went and I ate his pizza and I was like, here's this guy making New York style pizza, but it just blows everybody away. And that, you know, I'm not a food person, I'm not a chef, I'm a construction worker still at the time. And I was like, you know, and I'm sure Billy will agree, you know, what you grow up with, nothing is better than what you grow up with. Like, you know, Court Pastry on Court Street had the best cannolis, and Nino's had the best pizza, and you know, the Pinel store. Like, that's what I grew up with, and it was better than any other places, you know. And then that made me start thinking for the first time. Like, you know what? I've been living in a bubble, mm-hmm. you know, South Brooklyn, and it can be better.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if I'm going to make pizza, it has to be close to what this man is doing. And, you know, that's how it all came about.
Yeah, I've been out to DeFara just once, but yeah, it was very much worth the pilgrimage out there. Mm-hmm. Very special experience.
And that's not far from where I grew up, so I was onto that since I'm a kid. So it was that and Spumoni Gardens, and we basically mm-hmm. go back and forth between that and then.
And L&B was another big one for me.
Yeah.
So why do you think, or what do you attribute your success or to the point where you both have high demand? I mean, you're even saying yourself, like when you went to hometown, you know, didn't realize all that would be left was a turkey sandwich because of the popularity. And here at Lucali, it's like, you know, you have, there's a system. You got to get there early, get in line, put your name in, and because people love your pizza. And you have celebrities that come here. And I mean, there's a lot of hype around both of your places. So I guess the question is, like, what do you attribute that to?
I think what Mark and I share most, and what the public and our guests that we cherish so much like about us is our authenticity. You know, there's, you see what you see is what you get. And I think that goes a long way with guests, you know, knowing that someone really walked the walk and, you know, is willing to put in. And I speaking for Mark and myself, I think we both share the, you know, I think we both go in deep and dive deep into whatever new thing we're involved in. And I think, you know, even not knowing Mark, I know with me, I mean, I just dove deep. I said, if I'm going to make barbecue, I'm going to try to make literally the best barbecue in the world. And like Mark was saying, he found that mecca, you know, at DeFara and Midwood. And I found my mecca in Taylor, Texas at Louis Miller Barbecue. And I think once you find the pinnacle of what the best is, I think guys that grew up like Mark and I did, we won't take second best. So I think what Mark did was just make a million pizzas, and I would venture to say, like, most of my briskets when I started were awful. I'm sure every pizza he made starting out wasn't what we're eating today. I mean, but I think the drive and the care that we knew we had to get to before those doors opened, I think, you know, Mark and I are just absolute obsessive with the details. And whether it's the design of the buildings that you come into, when whether it's hometown or this unbelievable, stunning place that you come into, or the place we're sitting in the backyard right now. I mean, every single, I mean, you're sitting behind wine grapes. You know, I mean, yeah. What backyard in Brooklyn are you going to sit behind wine grapes and all these beautiful flowers, and there's vines of grapes growing? And I mean, you have a wine press. It's like, it's just the attention to detail, if you really look, is just so overwhelming. And that's I think what makes the guests that we treasure so much keep coming, and mm-hmm. and it doesn't die out. Sometimes you see restaurants, I mean, Mark has had an his incredible run, and obviously it's just getting the snowball is getting bigger as we speak, and you know, thankfully, you know, we're very blessed that that's also happening at Tavern and Hometown as well. So, you know, we don't let rest on our laurels as well. We just continue to work harder and harder and harder, and trying to keep improving what we're doing. And you know, that's what I see Mark doing on a daily basis, and you know, that's what I'm trying to do on a daily basis as well.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, what's up? Go.
Kind of like, not so much stepping away, but growing and having to step away from one place. I mean, does it stress you out?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. I've come to peace with it now, because I have such a good team. I think that's the key. Like, in order for you to get to the next move you're about to make, and you're about to make a lot of moves, but in order for you to do that, you have to have the team in place that you feel you can feel really comfortable stepping away from it. And you know, the beauty of our businesses is they're in the neighborhoods we live in, the communities that we care about. So like, we're not far from our businesses. And so yeah, I was really petrified even to walk six blocks away from Hometown when Tavern opened. But I have a real, you know, obviously, as you know, I spend a lot of time at Tavern now, and developing that, because I know I have a really strong team at Hometown. But yeah, it was like leaving your baby for the first time, and really feeling emotionally like you were abandoning that baby. That's how it felt for quite a while.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you both have gone on to do expansion, and it's interesting you both are down in Miami now, my hometown. And I was also, when you were talking, thinking about, I mean, we were talking about the character and the ambiance here at Lucali, which is so special. I have to say, like, Tavern and Hometown also has a really special feel to them. I mean, the design, the grandness of the Hometown barbecue spaces and the Tavern. I mean, there's something about the ambiance for all your places that just draws people in beyond the food. That has gotten me to take a ferry over to Red Hook and mm-hmm. get in line out here. So let me ask you my question for my last guest. I had on episode 297, Stephen Hall. He's the founder of Hall PR, which is a multilingual media agency focusing on culinary and hospitality. So he wants to know, how do you keep it fresh doing food that's kind of classic, pizza and barbecue? How do you keep yourselves motivated and excited when producing the same type of food over and over again for so long?
For me, I try to look at because, you know, unlike Billy, I'm making pretty much the same thing over and over and over again. You know, it's a, you know, where Billy's making ribs and burgers and chicken wings and turkey sandwiches, I'm just making it. And I just
calzone.
Well, yes, but the majority of it is pizza. And for me, I kind of love when there's when I'm making pizza and there's a null in the action, I try to look at every pie as an individual work of art. When it comes out of the oven, when it gets cut, and when it gets dressed with basil. Another thing that keeps me going is, you know, I'm in a open dining room, and you know, for the most part, I know when someone's here for the first time, and you know, constantly looking for that look on their face when they have that first bite.
Yeah.
And hoping that it's like something they've never had before, or close to what they've had before.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mark kind of stole the words from me this time. I mean, we work so hard at... So I have this mantra that my life is about chasing excellence, and the beauty of chasing excellence is that you can never catch it. But the journey of chasing it is just the most incredible part. And I would say, I don't care if I was only making turkey sandwiches every single day, but if you walk around the dining rooms at Lucali or Hometown and Red Hook Tavern, and I can assure you that Mark hearing that this is the best pizza experience anyone has ever had, or someone saying it's the best burger they ever had, or the best brisket they ever had, or the best turkey sandwich, or whatever it may be, will never get old. And
no.
I think the fact that Mark and I continue to chase excellence and are never satisfied with
what's coming. Never satisfied. Never satisfied.
Yeah, and I'm the same way. You know, I got asked by a barbecue interviewer one time, like, what's the first thing you think about when you wake up in the morning? And it wasn't a question about food. It was curious to what. And I said, oh, the brisket's going to be good today. And to this day, it's literally the first thing I think about. Because I know, because it's a different thing. We're cooking it for 16 hours, every animal's different. Whereas, you know, the cheeseburger at Red Hook Tavern, we have a perfect blend. We have it down to a science. Pat LaFreda helps me blend. You know, it's all scientifically done. And I know you cook it, you know, for X amount of minutes on both sides and flip it three times. You know, I mean, we have it down to a science, where brisket is just this thing that is just, it never is the same. So it's always like, so we're always chasing that excellence down every single day. And I agree completely with Mark that walking around the dining room and hearing those things, it's our drug, you know, is just seeing that all the hard work, all the dedication, that chasing excellence all day long for all these years pays off when someone says, wow, you took me out of my day for an hour or two and I just had this magical experience at your place, makes us happy to wake up the next day and try to do it better.
Yeah, well, I stopped by Red Hook, in Red Hook this weekend at Hometown, and I picked up some brisket and it was fabulous. So
good.
It's on point still. Good, that you. Makes you get through today and feel better.
I lose sleep at least a few minutes every night.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love your brisket, your barbecue, your burger, your pizza, your calzone. I'm wondering when I get to try your meatballs, because I've asked every time I'm here about them and they're like, no, they're not in the menu. So
they are.
I've heard though.
It's so funny. I had meatballs on the menu the other night, and you know, my girls are kind of like given instructions, like, I want to see the plate before you put it in the bin. When you move the plate from the table, I want to see it. And you know, just little stupid things that keep us going is like, you know, I would say 19 out of 20 times that dish is, because it's served in, you know, a bowl of sauce, and that dish is wiped clean.
Yeah. Well,
like, it is spotless.
Next time it's
like
on the
they
menu.
They did the job for my dishwasher, and but again, those are some of the things that, you know, keep you going.
Yeah. So talk a little about your new place, Baby Luke's. What inspired you to? I mean, to are you? Is it a growth period for you or both of you?
Believe it or not, more than Lucali.
Like I says, there was no game plan. There was no blueprint for Lucali.
Right.
It was kind of supposed to be a slice joint.
Like, oh, really?
Well, a gas oven, yes. And it somehow just morphed into this.
No slices.
You know, I guess I didn't realize how good I was at designing. You know, I was always building, but now I'm designing. And, you know, when it came time for you, I was like, I can't put a gas oven in this place, you know? And, you know, I built a brick oven. Since I was a kid, I remember there was this amazing pizzeria. It's now closed, Nino's, a few blocks away. It was my go-to spot when I was younger. One of a few in the neighborhood. I forgot where I was going with.
Well, we were talking about the design of the space, and you're putting your heart into it.
You asked about Baby Blues.
Yes.
You know, and I remember eating in these pizzerias, and as much as I loved them, and Billy will tell you, I'm a tweak. I was like, if they only did this, it would be so much better.
With my food.
Yeah.
Seriously.
You do that?
No, you tell me sometimes. Oh, man.
Oh, and you? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, that's what we do.
Yeah. Listen, yeah.
And I think a lot of it has to do with growing. I don't think, maybe Billy realizes, but at the time, someone wrote an article and they said, what's ordinary to me is not to others. And then I started realizing I grew up in this neighborhood in Brooklyn and you know, these really amazing restaurants, but you know, it was ordinary. It was what we ate on a daily basis at these restaurants. And that disappeared. And New York, I don't know if I want to use, or Brooklyn gets a different animal moved in. And you know, I saw people flocking to these places that, you know, like, why are they going there? You know, places are right. But it was ordinary to me.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, back to your question. I have a tendency to get sidetracked. Since I was a kid, I always wanted to open up a slice joint. Lucali was supposed to be that. It never happened. And now I'm doing it.
Now you're doing it. It's great.
Yep.
Yeah. I stopped by there the other day.
Yeah.
Got some slices. It's great.
This was supposed to happen, I want to say, 4 or 5 years ago. Uh-huh. I was signing a lease on Court Street. Right when I was about to sign it, after, you know, we ironed everything out, the landlord tried to put this stipulation in the lease where I had to only make vegan pizza.
Okay.
And that wasn't going to happen.
Right.
And I just waited, and then another location opened up, and here we are.
Man, that would have been a...
Yeah, right?
That would have been a thing. That would have been a thing.
Wow. Amazing. Let's take a little break, and we'll come back, and we will play my speedrun game. We'll talk some industry news, and my solo dining experience, and the final question. So stay with us as it's All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm so excited to partner with Talk, the only unified platform for reservations, takeout, and event management. Talk is home to 7,000 restaurants, bars, wineries, and breweries, including Sushi Nas in New York City, which delivers an up-close and personal experience between the guest and chef Nozomu Abe. So I had an incredible omakase solo dining experience at Sushi Nas a couple of years ago, which I talked about on my episode 220. And I had booked my reservation for the sushi counter through Talk, of course. My dinner began with 6 otsumami courses and then 15 pieces of pristine sushi, including sea perch and sea urchin, sea eel, and always a favorite of mine, fatty tuna, as it just sort of melts in your mouth. It's delicious. And this was truly a special experience. To learn more about how Talk powers reservations, events, and takeout, go to exploretalk.com/join. That's explore, TOCK.com heritageradionetwork.com/join. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guests today are Mark Iacono. He is the owner of Lucali and Baby Luke's in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn. And Billy Durney, the owner of Hometown Barbecue in Red Hook, Industry City in Miami, and Red Hook Tavern, also in Red Hook. Okay, so it's time for my speed round game. So what this is I'm going to name a couple things, and you got to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla. So I give you choices.
Okay.
You ready?
Ready.
Okay.
Do we go individually or at the same time?
There are no rules to the game and how you play.
For the first question, then I'll go. We'll do it like that.
Yeah. Well, however you want to do it works for me. Okay. Eat in at home or eat out at a restaurant?
Eat out at a restaurant.
Sunday dinner. At home.
That wasn't.
I'm like, what does that mean?
That wasn't.
Okay. That's Sunday dinner.
Only
at home.
Me and you know
only
what that
on Sunday.
Means. Only when you know what that
the
means.
The best thing with this game is I've been doing it for so long, and that's like a first. I love first. Okay.
We should explain what Sunday dinner is, though.
Sunday supper.
Sunday supper. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
supper.
Gravy. You make the gravy all day.
Make the gravy.
I know what this is.
Right. So that would have been my answer too.
All right. Now I go first, and you'll have more time to think.
Thank you.
Indoor dining or al fresco dining?
Depends on where I am. Indoor.
The answer would have been easily indoor, but now with current situations, outdoor.
See? Man, that's what I want. You know, if had I had more time to think, that's
there
what I
go.
Would have said.
We have the same brain. Ish.
Wine, beer, cocktail, mocktail, or champagne?
Diet Coke with lemon.
Well, the champagne wine differential threw me off. champagne.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Oof.
Who's cooking the tasting menu?
Yes.
Let's get the question.
Yeah.
Let's
Who would you want to be cooking the tasting menu?
Mark Iacono.
I'm down for that too.
Tasting menu.
Small plates or large plates?
See, there's another question, right?
Wait, who goes
is
first?
Is it family style, like where I grew up eating, or is it small plates?
Small plates.
Small plates for me, too. Yeah.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Chef's counter.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Me and Mark are where we like to
tippers.
Tip. Yeah.
Calzone pizza or English muffin pizza?
Pizza. Today.
Pizza.
Brisket or cheeseburger?
Oof.
Can you pick?
Cheeseburger.
Yeah.
That's great. Two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Dessert.
Dessert.
Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Come on.
I know. That's like a given, right?
Spread it the Brooklyn way.
Brooklyn.
Cool. That's the game.
That's a good game.
I like that game.
And keep going.
Do you have any more questions?
Why don't we give Sherry some questions?
You know, I mean, we have another segment coming up, but if you'd like to, go ahead.
Those are easy questions.
Yeah, those are softballs.
All right.
I have one for you.
Yeah.
Hometown or Lucali? No, I'm not going to let you. See, that's a tough question.
I know what her answer is already.
No, you don't have to answer that.
I know what the answer is. It's 100% Lucali.
Start at Lucali and then go to hometown. How about that?
And
you could be diplomatic, but I know that it's Lucali.
And then go to Red Hook Tavern on the way. No, I'm a huge fan of your restaurants. Don't get me wrong.
It's my favorite.
Me and Mark just like to.
No. Billy.
Your burger and Pat LaFrieda, good choice of who you're working with.
Right now, Red Hook Tavern is, I think, the only, it is the only restaurant. Like I tell you, I have a list of best things I've ever eaten.
Mm-hmm.
And there's maybe six restaurants on that list. Red Hook Tavern makes seven, and probably four of his dishes are on that list.
All right. Well, I want to get more of the intel on that after the show. Which of the dishes, unless you want to tell us now?
The andouille with the mussels with the andouille, the burger, the clam, and the prawns.
Ooh, nice. All right.
There you go.
There you go.
And well, still, no. I mean, this, they can keep going. But you know what it is?
Yeah.
I'm afraid to order anything else when I go there because these are the things that I love. And, you know, I'm kind of like a creature of habit when it comes to food. So, you know, still have
should
to
I give
more
everyone
of the menu.
Should I give everyone a tip on what to put in the calzone when they come here?
Yes.
My favorite.
No, he knows what I'm saying. It's a private joke.
Okay.
And, but we'll have literally every single person bringing in here.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see how many people listening to the show come in and start asking for that. Okay. So for industry news, an article I picked out in the New York Times, it's entitled Back to Normal. It's a tall order as New York City restaurants struggle. Diners are flocking back this summer, but owners still have trouble hiring, stocking kitchens, and paying rent. An uncertain autumn looms. And this is by Julie Creswell and Priya Krishna. So I've talked about this on my show previously a lot about the, especially about finding staffing issues happening. And this just touched on it more with staffing issues, gaps in food supplies, impatient diners a little bit. But as two restaurateurs who've been, I mean, let's talk a little bit about this past year, like the pandemic and getting through that. And then now how you're dealing with it. Are you finding you're also having staffing issues, shortages, and how's it going?
I think it's
how
a little different
survive?
From Mark and I, because Mark, I mean, as you know, and most of the people listening, I'm sure, know who have come to Lucali. Mark has like an entire team of gals that basically run the restaurant, and some have been with Mark since literally day one. And so he has kind of like a crew that, so I'm speaking for Mark here, but I don't know that staffing issues ever were a serious problem for him. That's front of the house. I'm not sure about back of the house.
The same. And I think a big part of it was, staying, like, you know, once the lockdown started, we stayed open from day one.
Mm-hmm.
I have my thoughts or reasoning for it. I could be wrong, but we weathered the storm. You know, Lucali's, you know, we didn't lose anybody. Everyone stayed on board.
It's amazing. And also having someone who's been here, and I know what your hostesses have to go through with people getting in line and taking names, and
yes.
it's not the easiest job.
Sometimes, you know, I thought about putting a bouncer out there, you know, to protect them, but they're pretty tough.
I could do
they're
that for
tough.
You.
Yeah.
I could be your bouncer.
So, through the years, their skin has thickened.
Yeah.
You know, I remember back in the beginning, they'd be in the back of the restaurant crying, literally, and I would have to stop, you know, making pizzas and go back there and, you know, give them a pep talk and, you know, go out there and put a few people in their place. But now they're doing it. They're fine.
they're tough gals, and they...
They weren't in the beginning.
Yeah. Well, that, like you said, their skin thickened, and now everybody's afraid of them.
Yeah.
For me, it was totally different. Our staffing continues to be a really, really hard issue. Right now at Red Oak Tavern, where we're looking for a sous chef, a line cook, grand manger cook, you know, dishwashers in both restaurants, a line cook in hometown, you know, line cook in Industry City. So we're pretty good front of the house in both places. But yeah, back of the house has been a real, real tough grind for us. And it's just an amazing accomplishment what the team does on a really short staff, being so short staff. I'm not quite sure, you know, there's all sorts of reasons people give us for why this is all happening, or my own personal views on it. But I think at the end of the day, you know, all of it makes sense, you know, whether a lot of people left the city, or a lot of people left the business, and, you mm-hmm. know, a lot of people wanted to stay on unemployment because, you know, unfortunately this restaurant and the restaurant business, the wages, you know, the margins are so tight that the wages aren't what they should be. And at one point, a lot of folks were making more money off not working than they were working. So, and, you know, no one's going to blame them for that. So, you know, all these things in one, you know, had, you know, accumulation effect on what's happened. I think that the government, the PPP definitely was a help for a lot of restaurants, you know, that I know and speak with on a regular basis. The revitalization money, you know, hasn't come in to most restaurants. You know, I think Senator Schumer said the other day that over 20-something thousand restaurants in New York still haven't gotten the revitalization fund money. So that would have been a huge help to us. So there's a lot of factors that are going on now, but, you know, we just wake up every morning, work hard, and, you know, keep team morale up, and, you know, hopefully this will all get better at some point.
Yeah, I hope so.
I think it's I think the workforce is going to come back. I think a lot of them right now may be backpacking across Europe with all that, you know, with everything that went on. And I think come September, October, we're going to see a swing in the workforce.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I've heard this. I mean, I've heard, Billy, what you've said from a lot of restaurateurs. And anytime I talk to any of my clients, they're like, let me know if you know any chefs, or people are looking. So I think
we're all looking in the same pool that doesn't really exist. So, and of course, you know, we're all looking for not only for anyone, but really people that fit into what our, you know, family mantra is, and you know, our standards are extremely high in all the places. You know, we're trying to run Hometown like a 3-Michelin-star restaurant. It doesn't look like one, but it doesn't mean the standards have to be less. So when we hire, it's just not anyone. We're really looking for someone who's all in and that can grow within the organization. So,
did you have a hard time transitioning back? Am I allowed to ask questions?
Yes, you are.
Transitioning back.
You know, back to, you know,
we have, well,
opening back up. I know, you know, in the beginning you were doing like us here, takeout, and, you know, like I stared at my,
still are at Hometown.
I built my seating, and, like, you know, I stared at it for a couple of months before. You know,
I know. Well, the answer to your question is, we're so grateful that people come, and we still do such an incredible amount of people that come to Hometown and support us. But it almost, you know, in some ways, because they're not getting the product exactly how I want them to get it, just like you, like with.
I'm talking more mentally. Like,
well, I'm still not there at Hometown. We don't reopen till around Labor Day inside at Hometown, the way it used to be with lines and so on and so forth, and, you know, bartenders and that whole vibe. So to me, it's still like, it's,
I'm talking about getting back to the grind. You know, as, and I'm not trying to be insensitive to what everybody went through during this whole thing, but it kind of was like, bro, what we do, what all restaurant owners, what we go through on a day-to-day basis. Like, we're like, you know, like doctors on call 7/24. It's always something.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
that doubt. Little break in the action. I mean, do you feel like a somewhat of a weight?
Yeah, a little bit.
A different weight was lifted off your shoulders.
Yeah, a little bit. But then another one gets put on.
Right.
You know,
yes, yes, like, yes.
You know, you get a little breather, and then all of a sudden something comes on. And then, you know, the amount of, you know, the amount of pivoting that restaurateurs have had to deal with in the last 18 months is just mind-boggling. And the fact that their teams were able to do it, the fact that there's any restaurants open right now is unbelievable.
I think the city was super supportive of that, especially with this outdoor seating.
Yeah, for sure. Outdoor seating completely saved, I would say, a majority of the restaurants.
But how easy they made it for us to do.
Yeah.
Which hopefully with you know, the new administration will, because so part of the problem is what's going to happen, right? you can almost see the writing on the wall that, you know, my hope is that this new administration that's coming in will not only continue what the prior administration did with the outdoor dining, but not then tax us for having this outdoor right. dining, which eventually is a lot of restaurant owners' fear, is that, wow, we spent $50,000 to build this structure outside or whatever it is, because lumber prices are completely ridiculous, like every other price.
Everything is ridiculous.
Yeah, everything's right now. Ridiculous, right? So, I mean, sheets of plywood, how much are sheets of plywood
it's when insane. You're in construction? It's saying these planks, I think they're at $86 for a plank.
Yeah, which would be like, what, $14?
$14,
yeah,
$16. Yeah,
so anyway, my point is, I'm hoping that, you know, they don't start taxing us and making us pay for these spaces.
Well, I think if they do that, because, I mean, I think it was like upwards of $15,000 to do at one point, and for half of what we have now. I think the city's in a position right now where with all the seats it's lost, with restaurants that have closed down, that's tax dollars that they're losing out on. And in some instances, this has, you know, it's doubled. In some instances, it's tripled the size of some restaurants. And I think that's tax dollars that the city desperately needs now. Right. So hopefully, I think they'll realize that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if we lost, what, 100,000 seats, you know, with all the restaurants that closed down, we probably recouped 60% of that with this outdoor seating.
Yeah.
And that's extra tax revenue. So hopefully they realize this and let us keep doing it.
Yeah.
One thing
sorry to interrupt. I think it's like, you know, like if we're one of the few major cities in the world that doesn't do this outdoor dining and the people are just eating it up.
Yeah.
In midwinter, they don't care.
No, we were full. We were full most nights in the middle of the wintertime.
I dined outside when it was like 32 degrees a couple of times. My toes were freezing, but it was like such a special experience.
Even the restaurants that don't have good food are packed.
Yeah.
Real estate.
I used to love going to Montreal in the wintertime, like, or like right prior to winter. It was already winter, basically, temperatures, and eating, you know, going outside and, you know, being in the backyard at Joe Beef and just hanging out and drinking wine and, like, you know, I just think it's a unique dining experience that, like Mark says, happens all around the world, particularly in Europe, and
not here.
And for some reason, it's not here. But now it is, and I think that it would be really an injustice for it to ever change. I mean, I don't see it going away, and I don't think it should.
I just hope restaurateurs don't screw it up with some of the things that they are doing, you know. And I hope they. Myself included, you know, we need to continue to be responsible for what we put out there, not only for the safety of our customers, even like, you know, there are a lot of eyesores out there.
It's mixed, but I actually have a restaurant client that I've been working with, Azatar, that opened a second location in the city. He only has his terrace right now. Like, he built his terrace and now he's working on the indoor construction of the space, and he got open for the summer. He's doing incredible business. So I don't know if there's ever been a restaurant in Manhattan before that's opened the outside before the inside, but like,
and you want to know something, a project this big, you know, if you want to call it that, surprisingly went really well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the way everybody came together, you put something like that in the, you know, it could have turned into this crazy free for all, and it didn't.
You know, it's also amazing how it definitely drove local economy. I mean, you were in the construction business for a long time.
That's
what construction people do all fall and winter long. They like basically they're trying to find the same nut, the same all squirrels trying to find the same nut. Now you couldn't get one to do any work for you in the wintertime because they were all so busy. Yeah. And, you know, to their credit, they came out and they did it in harsh weathers and stuff like that, and they crushed it. So,
and I also think, even without the pandemic, I think it's something the city desperately needed.
Yeah.
New York City, I don't know, it was going in a weird direction. And with everything that brick and mortar places are going through, whether it's clothing, whatever, it was kind of like losing some of its charm.
Yeah. Yeah, and this created an energy that New York needed desperately. Yeah. And
prior to
I was eating at King last week with Daniel Krieger. We went out to King and we were like, oh, let's just take a walk around. We were walking around.
Yeah.
It was like on fire.
I mean, yeah, like it was in the 80s, the city, you know?
No, 90s. It was popping off and people were going crazy. People were having a good time. People were enjoying the restaurants. All the restaurants were busy. And it was good to see it. And there was definitely a resurgence of energy in the city like I hadn't seen in a long, long time. And I think outdoor dining provides that.
Would you agree prior to pandemic?
No. Yeah, I would agree with you. It was not that energy.
No, you know, and it's also made, if you know, the New York experience more accessible to people, because mm-hmm. New York became very, and I'm really talking about more about the nightlife, and it came more like inaccessible, and now it's accessible.
Yeah, well, even with you and your pizzas, being that you people could get pizza to go and you were doing delivery for a bit too.
It more accessible to New Yorkers.
But I think the problem.
But I know that's a different thing. But I was thinking with accessible, like your product itself, like you were more mm-hmm. people were able to get your pizza.
The problem with that is though, and I don't want to speak for Mark, but and like you said, I went by and had brisket the other day. It almost cringe every time someone says they go to the restaurant, because I'm not sure what their experience is going to be, because at the end of the day you have to order it online still, and then you get it in a bag and it's wrapped in butcher paper and aluminum foil, and it's just not the same experience as going and waiting on the line, having the carver slice the brisket and turkey and beef.
But it's still amazing.
It's not the same. There's no way the quality could ever be the same as it is when you get it cut right off the carving board and it's on a tray,
but you at 75% is still better than anybody at 100%.
Well, I know, but my standard,
and I'm not trying to blow smoke up your, you know.
No, I know. I appreciate that.
Yeah. But we got to do what we got to do to survive.
But that's it. Yeah.
People know.
People know.
Right. The customers know.
No, and having
I'm constantly sticking up for restaurants, like people are like, oh, I went here and I ate this. I was like, and it wasn't, you know, yeah, we're in COVID mode. You know, we're short staffed, where we have to cut back on the quality of things. You know, we have to do it to survive. Mm-hmm. And you know, no, this isn't what we do on a day-to-day basis, but to survive, this is what we need to do, especially with the staffing problem. Again, I've been fortunate. Billy's been fortunate. A lot of restaurateurs haven't been so fortunate as us.
Yeah, Mark and I are lucky that we have this following and we have the support from our local community and people from all over the country. And
that was so heartwarming to see how, you know, the community gave back.
Yeah.
To all restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
And showed their support.
Yeah, we would have been crushed without the local support. All the restaurants would have been really in trouble. We were very fiscally responsible prior to. That's another thing. So I mean, like as a business owner, it's not only the quality of food and the service and how special that your team and family is that you work with every day, but you know, being fiscally responsible as a business owner is very, very important, especially to me and our group. So. And of course Mark as well. So it's like we were fiscally, you know, because there's very busy businesses that aren't fiscally responsible financially, and those businesses went out of business. You know, I'm talking about I won't name names, but big well-known restaurants that went out of business because it's hard to be fiscally responsible sometimes when the margins get so low. So we were able to, you know, have, you know, a good stash of finances to like help us, you know, soothe the blow, if you will.
For the customer.
To keep employees employed and, you know, to be able to continue to do business. You know, listen, if the pandemic happens and you have no money in the bank because you weren't fiscally responsible, you're out of business.
Yeah, it happened to some people, for sure. A lot of people, restaurants closed. And
it's not their fault. I mean, especially my friends in the city, it's brutal. It's like rents are just ridiculous. There's no justification of why rents are so expensive.
And in Brooklyn, I think the intimacy with the landlords, like landlords are still, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for me, I mean, both of my landlords are like local folks who grew up in those neighborhoods.
And they got it. They understood.
And they understand, you know, what it takes for the struggle and what the struggle is for the restaurateur. So.
I give you guys a lot of credit. I did take, I did meet some friends, I guess it was last summer when you were open outdoor dining in Red Hook Tavern. That was one of my like first meals or summer meals outside and was fabulous. And the fact, that you've survived this time and are moving forward. And the brisket was fabulous, even though I have to say, you're right. Like having, the experience is just different. It's the same as like ordering pizza, you know, delivered versus being in the restaurant. They're different experiences, but the quality of your food is, both of you, fabulous.
Thank you.
Let me share my solo dining experience because it's a Brooklyn place I went to that actually was supposed to open back in March 2020 and was delayed. I don't know if you guys have been, but my solo dining experience this week is at Gage and Tolner. So here's
the
rundown.
Very good friends of mine.
Oh, cool. Location, 372 Fulton Street, downtown Brooklyn, near
City. Everyone go.
Everyone go. The concept, revived landmark dining, an oyster and chop house for the 21st century. The owners are partners St. John Frizzle.
St. John.
Okay. Glad you're helping me here. I got
St. John Frizzle. Yeah.
St. John. And Ben Schneider.
Yeah.
And then Chef Sohee Kim. And pastry chef Carolyn Schiff.
Yeah, smaller.
So why'd they go? I love me a good revival. My experience. So I went on a weekday. I went in as a walk-in, which I was like, when was the last time I've gone to a restaurant as a walk-in to go to sit at the bar? But I did, and there was luckily one seat at the bar, and the place had amazing energy. I was very happy to be there. Service was great. I chatted with neighbors sitting around me. It was a good time. What did I get? I got the she crab soup with blue crab and sherry, and I got the G&T Caesar salad, and I also had to get dessert, so I got coconut layer cake with lime curd, cashew pink, peppercorn brittle, and jammy blueberries, and I had a club soda. My take? Perfect soup and salad combo. It was really great. I mean, I don't really have she crab soup ever, but I love crab meat, and so it was fabulous. Caesar was perfect. The coconut crepe was delicious. I actually took a little of that leftovers to go because I didn't finish it, and I wanted it. So the ambiance, it's a landmark interior with gas lamps and cherry-framed wall-length mirrors and mahogany tables. It's really, what's cool, too, is in the back they have this mirror, and so it looks like the restaurant just goes on and on. I really like the ambiance. I'd say it's perfect for solo dining at the bar or going for drinks and dinner with a friend or two. Interesting tidbit. So Gage and Tolner originally opened in 1879 in the same and they've been in the same location since 1892. They had closed in February 2004, and then they were supposed to open, as I said, in March 2020. Pandemic hit, so they got opened just recently, and it got a nice write-up from Pete Wells in the New York Times, and it's a designated landmark from 1975. Okay, so personal fun fact, what brought me out to Brooklyn that night is I actually came out here and I went to Baby Luke's and I got some slices and then I hung out a little bit and I walked over there. And I think after all these years of living in New York while I live in Manhattan, I've kind of finally figured out how all the neighborhoods of Brooklyn are connected. Because I used to just pop up on the train and not know where I was. And it's not that far from here. Okay, so the cost of this meal was $47, not including tax and gratuity. Would I go back? Yes, I would. Their website is gageandtolner.com and on Instagram, gage.and.tolner. Okay, so everyone should go. Final question. I'm going to ask you guys a good question for my next guest. So next show I'm having on chef and owner Surbhi Sani of Tagmo, which is an Indian kitchen and specialty sweets company. And she's opening a new restaurant in Manhattan's Seaport District in the early fall, coming up soon. I work with, full disclosure, I work with Serbia. She's one of my clients, and I'm excited for her opening. So, Mark and Billy, can you please ask a question for Serbi?
I would ask Serbi that being a very specific cuisine style, has she, like me, been able to pick up on, now living in New York, been able to pick up any of the multi-ethnic, multicultural influences to put into her cuisine now? That would be my question.
Great question. Do you want to add anything to that? Yeah.
My question was actually going to be like, you know, I a lot of people that, you know, that I have conversations with about Indian food, you know, we talk about Indian restaurants, they all tell me the same thing. Yeah, that's not authentic Indian food.
Oh, yeah, it's an interesting point.
Yeah, and, you know, will you be cooking authentic Indian food? Mm-hmm. And if no, why not?
That's a really interesting question, actually. I mean,
it's never authentic.
I have several really close Indian friends, and every single one of them says the exact same thing Mark just told me. And they're like, yeah, but you, because I'm like, oh, I don't really eat Indian food. And they're like, that's because you never had real Indian food. And recently I ate at one of their, very good sommelier friend of mine, I ate in his backyard, and he made some Indian dishes, and they were just absolutely delicious. So
authentic?
What's that?
Authentic Indian dishes?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I thought that was really interesting. And there was a lot of cool condiments. I like condiments. There was a lot of cool condiments. Indian condiments that he introduced to the table that I had never seen before. So Raj, thank you. That was a really good lunch. But yeah, I think it's a really interesting question. You know, I have a feeling that I know the answer to that. I'm sure it's going to be really, really, you know, really dialed in Indian food that's traditional.
Do you think the American palate can't handle it?
No, I don't think so. I think there are those restaurants out there. I just think that, you know, you have to like have someone who really dines at Indian restaurants a lot to like kind of give you a guide. Like you and I wouldn't know what.
No, I mean I've only had really two experiences with Indian food. The first one was at Indian Accent.
Yeah.
And it was a mind blowing meal. Like I tasted things that I've never tasted before, but you know, as soon as I started telling people about it, nope, not Indian food. I was like, okay, it was amazing,
but
not authentic, not even close.
Well, I'll let Serbi answer it, but I believe she's doing home style cooking, like dishes that she grew up with that are authentic. I think the word authentic gets thrown around a little bit nowadays. Sometimes, you know, it gets a little overused or people almost like abuse the word, like it's not, it hurts those that are doing the really authentic stuff. Mm-hmm. I will see what she says to all of that.
Wish her luck from us.
Oh, I can't believe I had such a smart
tell her we're gonna come eat that.
Yes, and I'm excited to try it.
And we'll go for Indian. Fabulous. Yeah. Okay, so
and then we'll have her we'll do a collab barbecue pizza and Indian
food. Maybe a calzone would be like
calzone. Yeah, we'll make a barbecue. We'll smoke we can some do Indian pizza. Food and can do put it in pizza. A calzone, and we'll do a collab together.
Yes,
I'm in. I'll promote that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for joining me. I'm a huge fan. I'm honored to have this time to spend with you, both of you. I wish you both much continued success, and I look forward to eating with you too in the future. Yeah.
Well, I have a feeling you're going to be getting a meatball at some point.
Yes.
Now that you...
it's my prize.
That you've
They're really, really on the fly.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I just make them.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I have time today, I make them and they go on the menu.
All right.
How it started was me and I would blend some beefs for Mark and just give it to him, and then he'd start making... Well, it started way before that, but... Then he'd start making meatballs, and that's how I got to eat them. I'd have to blend them.
Well, thank you guys. So my guests today have been Mark Iacono, the owner of Lucali and Baby Luke's in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn, and Billy Durney, the owner of Hometown Barbecue in Red Hook, Industry City in Miami, and Red Hook Tavern in Red Hook. their websites, LukeCullyBrooklyn.com, BabyLukes.com, HometownBBQ.com, RedHookTavern.com, and Instagram. Do you want to?
No.
Instagram handles, LukeCully_BK.
Yes.
Baby Luke's Pizza.
Baby Luke's Pizza.
At Baby Luke's Pizza, at Red Hook Tavern BK, at Hometown Barbecue, and barbecue is BARBQUE, and that's like
B-A-R-B-Q-U-E.
At least in the Instagram. Yeah.
Yeah.
That could be a whole show of like talking about how to spell barbecue, but another time.
That's true.
When I call Billy on Sirius, I call Billy, Hometown BBQ.
Hometown BBQ. And also Instagram, we got W Durney and Hometown BBQ Miami. Am I missing anything?
Oh, that's it.
Except mine at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. Website's BayerPublicRelations.com, SherryBayer.com, and AllInTheIndustry.com. All of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. It's our summer membership drive here at Heritage Radio. We would love your support. We are a nonprofit and we rely on our listeners. So if you can, please go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate and designate my show on the industry. And many thanks in advance. Thanks to my engineer today, Liam Werner. Thanks again to Mark and Billy. And thanks to our sponsor of this show, Talk. I'm Sherry Bayer. It is our summer break at HRN. So we're off for a few weeks. I will be back on Wednesday, September 8th with a new show. Enjoy the rest of the summer, and thank you all for being part of All in the Industry.
Thank you.
All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. I'm Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.